everybody, it's Emily here from the Willow Pod, and today I've got with me Peter from Intuitive Thinking Skills. Hi, Peter.
Hello there, good afternoon.
So I'm really excited to talk about what you do. We've had a quick little chat before we started recording, everybody, and it just sounds amazing. So what is Intuitive Thinking Skills?
Well, in the context of this conversation, Intuitive Thinking Skills is the company that we run, and we run a variety of attitude change programs across the UK. I think the interest in this particular area is our abuse element of that work. But we are a national company delivering attitude change programs with a real heavy reliance on the lived experience of our staff, who we recruit through our learners and get them back in front of future learners, bringing all of that experience with them. So that's kind of the ethos we approach this with.
So it's people who have already been on the courses that then come and be trainers with you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, that's very much the model.
So what is it you're actually delivering in Derbyshire then with the domestic abuse programme?
Okay. So the programme in Derbyshire, it's called the This Ends Here programme, and it's been commissioned primarily as an offender of domestic abuse across Derbyshire. You'll have got there that I didn't use the word perpetrator, and as we go through this interview, we'll talk more about how important we feel language and labelling is as it plays out in people's behaviour. So we were approached about 3-4 years ago by a commissioner within DCC who loves our work in the drug and alcohol service, which is still our single biggest area, where we do attitude change. Also, because I think she realised that there was a missing piece in Derbyshire, particularly around early intervention for offenders of domestic abuse. And she wanted us to look at whether we could write a short duration programme, because the longer term perpetrator programme, whilst all good, and as it is, there was, you know, quite a lot of dropout from it, and whether we could do something earlier in the intervention to get there. So we went away and utilising my staff who are already on board, many of whom have already been through that. One of my colleagues, Leanne, ran with using our common skills in our classroom, our cognitive change skills, to be used both in a programme for those offenders of, but also the people in those family settings who've been affected by this.
Yeah.
Our work is 18-year-plus adults. We do a small amount of work with younger on a case-by-case basis where it's appropriate. But in terms of domestic abuse, it's adult. So we went away and we wrote a programme. We came back and we ran that as a pilot across Derbyshire, taking referrals from police and from social services. So again, everything we do is short duration, high impact. And what I mean by that is the real learning taking place is when people go out about and about in their real lives and implement the skills that we're doing. We demonstrate how to implement skills, often that they've already got these skills, just with different outcomes, of course. And we expect our learners to implement those and change the way they behave. And that is an expectation made very plain. It's an expectation. Hence the titles of our core two courses. This ends here means this ends here. And on those affected others, enough's enough means exactly that. And you can hear from that language what we bring into each of those classrooms. So in Derbyshire, we ran our pilot some years ago now, about 2 years ago. And we had the lovely situation where we had, because it was a pilot aimed in this, we had police data, we had social services data, predominantly police, because what we were trying to do was reduce the numbers of call-outs related to domestic abuse at those families that we work with.
Yeah.
So we worked with just over 20 families throughout that pilot. And the big headline take-home from the evaluation report, which was written by Derby University, but we were able to demonstrate a 72% reduction in call-outs from the year prior to the course to the year after.
Wow.
So as a headline, we're all very interested in that. We've got something here that's having an impact in terms of how we work there, and hence being commissioned this year and next as the next sensible stage of that pilot to further look at whether we can keep that momentum up around that, and also, of course, improve the programme as well to make it even better.
Yeah.
So those are kind of where we came. So this was a programme we're now delivering nationally. very much born and bred in Derbyshire with the help of the commissioners, who I will be eternally grateful for. And it's a nice example where commissioning, which sees something missing, rather than in that case go out to market, they simply said, you know, you've got those sort of skills. Can you write something that's applicable using all your bank of lived experience? And here we are now with a full programme. We have a real passion for how education can be delivered. The beauty of education is it's equal, delivered on a level playing field, lots of lived experience in a classroom, rather than therapy, which tends to be done to the person. And the nature of that relationship is really important in learning. It absolutely is. And I think that's where one of the areas we are particularly strong. How do we capture the really good lived experience of people who've come through and not make it about support? And I say this with respect, an element of kind of poor me.
Yes.
That's come from their past. And instead say, you know, you've got unique skills. We're still here. We're still standing up. We're still, you know, doing our thing. And beautifully, I've not been back into a service for years. Because that's a really good indicator of a robust resilience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense. So whilst the programme we're delivering, this in Derbyshire, is primarily around plugging a gap for that early intervention offender of work, we have side by side, we have running the course as we run them for the affected other or others. So both can get that. And we see a real mix of different types of referrals, different perceived needed outcomes. And of course, because of the social services involved, a lot where there's a child in need or on a risk register of some sort, where of course, one of our primary aims is to make sure that the outcomes are appropriate and right for that child in that instance.
You've talked a little bit about social services involvement and police involvement. How does someone get referred onto your programme?
Dead easy. You go to www.intuitivethinkingskills.com. You go to the fast referral form on there, and it's self-explanatory. And in the notes, you would just put DA. Literally, just a reference to domestic abuse. We take many referrals through that. We're taking about 5,000, 6,000 referrals a year through all of our activity. But we put the DA tab on, and at that point, a slightly different referral process takes place than let's say, for our long-term unemployed work or our drug and alcohol, because we don't want to just directly contact an individual without a whole host of conversations with them.
Yeah, taking place,
so,
yeah.
So, that will go to our DA team, who will pick up the phone and have a good old chat over a biscuit and a cup of tea, where you get to know the real stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
And we'll discuss the actual family in place, what the risk associations are, and then move forward accordingly based upon that information. So we put a plan that's unique to each and every referral that reflects the wider partnership that we take those referrals through. We love group work. We think people learn from one another really well, but sometimes for other reasons, often you might choose to do one-to-one work, but that will all be decided at the front end. And of course, if there is another person or persons involved, we would seek permission to speak to them and offer them. We would at very minimum make sure they are safe and covered and offered, if not our courses, other courses. But we'd also look if it's appropriate for them to come on our Enough's Enough course. And from there, we take that from there. So there's like two parallel courses potentially working together. They don't have to be the same days at all, but they are within very close proximity. And that's very much how we handle that process. I think another thing that's worth mentioning that we do proudly is where appropriate. We don't have a kind of a rule that says we don't do mixed gender classes. We will mix. We will always be learner-led. So we had somebody in there said, I don't want that. That's absolutely fine. If it's appropriate, people can learn from one another. Their gender shouldn't be a matter. No. Shouldn't matter. And of course, in some respects, it can be in terms of breaking down stigma and the like. It can be important that people see that not all people of that sex and gender behave like that. It's a case-by-case basis every single time.
You were talking briefly about how you don't like the word perpetrator. Can you talk more about that? I find that really interesting.
Of course. I think one of the things that we do well in our history, we've been going for now 17, 18 years. And when we first started, I mean, I went through Drug and Alcohol Services and wrote our intuitive recovery program, basically because I got a brilliant first-rate detox, drugs and alcohol. I then hit services, which in 2003-2004, with respect, weren't very good. Boy, did they want me in there, but they didn't want me out and fixed.
Oh.
That was it ran through everything, the lack of aspiration that was evident. So rather than just moan, I wrote a program, like, you know, my mother would tell you that I always think I can do something better. So I wrote a program, which is now a nationally delivered program. I'm very proud of what we do in that regard. But again, what we did there, we looked at industry describes itself and often self-justify. It's very natural, whether and this would be true of pumping oil, growing apples, or delivering in services like such as ours. And some people find that a hard, slightly hard pill to swallow, but it is true. As we start describing cohorts of people, mm-hmm. people start ending up getting described as the problem they present.
Yeah.
So at its most simple, you get victims. Very, very clear that if we keep referring to people as victims, they'll behave as victims after a while.
Yeah.
Same with offenders, really. And we're not totally late, but it's a damn sight better than the perpetrator, which is heavily judgmental.
Mm.
We want our learners in our classroom, regardless of what they've done, to be willing participants in the change process, which we use in education. So removing those barriers and saying, I don't see you as a perpetrator. I see you as a skilled individual. The vast, vast majority of people who we'll see through our domestic abuse on our offender program, they know what they did was wrong.
Yeah.
They feel guilty about it, and that guilt in turn can fuel anger. So let's be really simple about this good and bad side, although we're much more nuanced in our classroom about that. What we're giving our learners the ability to do is to say no and shut up the voice and the set of criteria that justify the behaviour.
Yeah.
So to do that, you've got to look at what beliefs underpin that language. So the problem where we describe people in the problem is it embeds those beliefs. Yeah, I'm a perpetrator.
Yeah.
I'm a drug addict. Alcoholic. Poorly word. Means nothing. Used all the time. So we look hard at those permissive beliefs. We explode them in the classroom for what they are. And once people see them as not true, or so what? So what if that happened? That doesn't mean tomorrow I have to act like that. And people start being able to see that their outcomes, their behaviours can be altered by putting on new beliefs, firmly installed, credible, all those things. Their actual actions will change. So you'll still find yourself in a situation, like everybody in any relationship does, where you get angry. But it doesn't mean you resort to X, Y, and Z. You have other ways, another positive ways of dealing with anger. Does that make sense, Emily? Have
it
I described that okay?
It really does. It's really, really got me thinking. Yeah, I'd really like to have you back because I think we can explore this so much more. It's
always love to.
Yeah, it's just so interesting. And I like the way you're using your approach in so many different ways, like you say, with drug and alcohol, with students and children, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you went through what you did to enable us to have this.
Isn't that funny? Because I now didn't look back on that. I was 38, 39, so I would describe it as my midlife crisis. At the time, it seemed like all-consuming, everything. And okay, we work in the sectors and we love the work we do. And it's, you know, we've got 60 staff now. The common thing there, I kind of realised when I sorted myself out, where I truly understood that I was the problem, not the rest of everything else around me. And that I'd onboarded in my head a voice that would justify just about anything. And also, I used to describe that individual in my head as Arthur Daly. He's trying to sell you the next little hit.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But he's a harmless, toothless idiot, Arthur Daly, isn't he?
Yeah.
I used to think I should take him seriously. I hope the analogy is useful, because it doesn't take a genius to realise that Arthur Daly shouldn't be taken seriously.
No.
So whilst he can be conniving, deceitful, all of those things, he does talk rubbish. And he, and once you see him in that instance, for what it is, that inner voice that had me popping pills, snorting coke, drinking myself into an early grave and all of that, it seems almost embarrassing that I ever listened to him. Now I'm on board with this new knowledge and I'll never use again, and I still get a kick from that all these years later, and it's still true. We all see people who've done some terrible things. We also see people who've done less terrible things, but completely wrong, but they're not, you know, the scales aren't there. Firstly, we shouldn't treat all people going through domestic abuse as offenders, as top-end offenders, should we? And we certainly shouldn't plan services to only deal with those people at the behest of others.
Yeah.
But also, you can see already how the judgmental nature of it is problematic, or could be problematic. And what we're aiming in our classrooms is to get a trusting level playing field.
Oh goodness, we need to need a longer podcast and keep you on for ages. It's just so interesting. For today, we'll leave it here, and we will have you back. I'm sure we'll have requests to have you back. We shall put the link to your intuitive thinking skills in the bottom of the podcast so people can access it should they need to.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
That's brilliant. Right, we'll sign off for today. Thank you so much, Peter.
My pleasure.